Web Guy, it's that time every 2 or 3 or 4 years that we all get behind soccer and the Socceroos in their bid to qualify for the World Cup. This week, Australia went a little step closer to qualifying by beating Syria 2-1. And of course, the man of the moment was Tim Cahill for his 2 goals in that pretty gripping victory over Syria. Now, obviously, the game is huge, but there's been plenty that sort of overshadow the result, including Ange Postecoglou speculation about his future, but also Timmy's celebrations after one of his goals. And I believe you've got a bit of information on that.
Weird, this one. I don't remember ever seeing this before. A conspiracy theory circulating around Tim Cahill's post-goal celebration. The goal celebrations are a big deal in soccer.
Absolutely. It's almost one of the highlights of the sport is just seeing the exhilaration and the way they celebrate.
Yeah.
People have made it a bit of an art form. Some have, and some are just crazy with excitement.
Yeah, and it's sort of like a signature, like, oh, you know, this guy does this celebration, you know, he kicks the goal, wait for it. I think Cahill has been known a lot of times to sort of do a boxing thing.
Yeah, shadow box with the flag on the corner there.
This week, after one of his goals, I think it was the winner. He did like a T shape with his, put his two arms together to make a T.
Kind of looks like a big timeout
symbol,
but a bit more stronger.
Exactly.
Stronger.
I don't know what anyone thought of it at the time. Apparently in the Fox Sports coverage, they cut to a replay of the goal. So maybe it wasn't even on air.
Oh, I reckon once you brought this up again, I felt like I saw him do a celebration where he sort of ran past the crowd. I don't know if that was the moment, but...
Well, in real life, I'm not sure whether it was on TV or not, he did this T symbol, and who knows what anyone made of it at the time, but a few days later, his business, Tripadeal, Byron Bay-based travel business, will blow me down. They've posted an Instagram photo of Tim Cahill doing this T thing straight after the goal, and here's their caption on the photo. Did you catch Tim Cahill, our new brand ambassador, doing the Tripadeal T after he scored the winning goal last night? Congratulations, Tim. Soccer ball emoji. So now, speculation is, it was not a goal celebration. It was an advertisement for Tripadeal. They say doing the Tripadeal T, like that's some new fad thing that it's going to catch on. Everyone's going to be doing the Tripadeal T, man.
Let's hope it's not. But I think it is.
Well, it looks sus because in response to that post, Tim Cahill himself, he's responded with this comment. Always a pleasure. Another chapter written and plenty more to come. Amazing team performance, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? So he's basically, you know...
Hasn't refuted it.
No, he's climbed on board.
Why else would you do a T? Is there any other reason why Tim Cahill...
Could be a T for Tim.
True. But he's known his name as Tim for quite a while. You'd think he would have come up with that celebration previously.
Yeah, and then for this business to take that image and post this, if it wasn't the case, like, he'd be shutting it down.
Absolutely.
It's led...
He'd explain it. He'd clarify it. Because we scrutinise everything.
Yeah. It's led to some concern about... Because he scored 2 goals in this game. Now there's questions raised about his equaliser that he scored. And he did... Maybe this was what you saw. He did like a plane. You know how like the Hayne plane where Jared Hayne used to do it, but others have done it where, you know, they put their stretch out their arms like they're a plane. Like,
yes.
I describe it, I realise it's the most ridiculous thing anybody could ever do. Like, you score a goal and then you pretend you're a plane. All right, good on you. Now people are saying, well, maybe that was a brand tie-in for this Tripadeal mob as well. Who knows? And, like, everyone's so cynical now. But anyway, the Tripadeal guy... The owner has basically said that, yeah, he's our brand ambassador. Expect to see more of this.
It's no good.
You're not a fan.
Well, what do you think? Or do you think it's just clever marketing? I think it's part of the game, though. Like, we all get swept up in the emotion of the game, and we remember, you know, the celebrations after we qualified for the World Cup for the first time, and the Aussie players with their shirts off, running, chasing each other.
Yeah.
That is in Australian history. Do we want an advert in Australian history?
Looking back on it, Aloisi was probably advertising Bonds or something. Like his undershirt was, if you look closely, there was a logo on it.
Yeah.
Well, it does make you feel like, okay, well, our default setting in 2017 has to be everything we see and hear, everything that our senses perceive, just assume it is advertising. Because it probably is.
Because the bit I love about sport is the backstory. And I love when they'll go, hey, to an AFL footballer, why did you have the word, you know, X on their wrist?
Yeah.
And generally it's a story about, well, my uncle's ill and he had this advice when he played football. And you go, wow, that's a good story behind the story of the actual game.
Mm.
We don't want people going, oh, what is that written on your wrist? And it's a sponsor.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because when you need a holiday, you should check out tripadeal.com. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's just boring, if nothing else. Didn't Dustin Martin do a famous salute or a celebration? He did like a handcuffs or something?
Oh, yes.
When his dad was in strife or something, and he scored a goal, and he did some kind of like jail salute or something.
I can't think it off the top of my head, but are there any other really characteristic advertising slogans that use your hands or facial expressions? Are we going to see more of miming of events? Or
yeah, there's that that superannuation TV ads where they make the super symbol with their two hands.
Growing plant sort of.
Yeah. And so they like do that symbol. So wait to see, you know, someone take a wicket in the Ashes test and then do that.
Or McDonald's, big sort of. No, that's too
golden
obvious.
Golden arches.
Too obvious.
Make out a burger, like you're holding a burger. You know, you can't blame people for making a buck where they can, but doesn't mean we have to like it, really, does it?
Well, Timmy's pretty broke. Yeah, you know, such a long career, he'd be pretty hard up going from one professional club to the next. He needs that extra. I mean, how much would Tripadeal, as part of his agreement, would he have had to do this? Would they go, we'll give you a bonus of trip around the world, or
yeah,
well,
he
20K?
He would not be paying anything on travel expenses for wherever he goes. We know that much. Just before our next item, Newsman, I just want to quickly talk about another podcast. It's called Is This Movie For You?
Yes.
It's part of the Ozcast family.
Heard it's good.
That's where we live. We live on Ozcast. Is This Movie For You? Also lives on Ozcast. And let me just give you a quick rundown on this. If you are a movie guy, I think you are.
Love movies.
But you can't see every movie. Which movie do you see? Check these guys out. They'll give you the lowdown on what's going on. They remind me of you'd remember David and Margaret.
Yeah.
No one under 48 would remember, but these guys, Andy and Yasmin, they're younger, much better looking, more relevant.
More hip,
probably more knowledgeable, movie experts of the current crop appearing at the cinema. So trust what they say. They do a cool thing where they don't even actually have to have seen the movie. They sort of review trailers even as well.
Oh, wow.
So before the movie has actually arrived, you can get a sense of, well, is this what I want to see? I was listening to a lot of their horror movie previews for, there's this movie called Mother, which I think will mess you up mentally if you watch it. Also, It. Have you seen that yet?
Not yet, no.
Judging by their review of the trailer, I don't know. Hug your loved ones.
Go to the toilet before you go in the cinema.
Yeah, that's probably advisable too. So yeah, it'd be great to go see all the movies, but if you've got to pick and choose, can't get to everything, these guys will tip you in the right direction.
Great, sounds good.
Is This Movie For You? Outrageous scenes this week, newsman, for what I am going to go on record as saying the most stupid reason ever for to see a crowd protest.
I'm assuming this is about gun laws or something that Donald Trump's done.
Yeah, you'd think it's something serious, wouldn't it? A mob, you'd think an angry mob would get together for a worthy cause. How about special sauce at McDonald's?
Well, McDonald's is a pretty big restaurant, but I wouldn't have thought anything they make is worth doing that, going that far, that extreme.
Apparently it's a rare Szechuan, I want to say.
Szechuan.
A very rare Szechuan that they used to make, stopped making it. It's been referenced in a really popular TV, US cartoon, Rick and Morty. And off the back of that, fans have been demanding this new Szechuan, or the rare Szechuan. McDonald's caved and said, yeah, all right, let's do this, bring it back. So they brought it back, limited time only. But they didn't bring enough of it back. And the scenes that we've seen are just ridiculous. Like, I've got some shots here. It's all gone onto social media. And there's crowds of people holding placards. Hashtag, give us the sauce.
Oh, man.
So basically, McDonald's didn't have enough of this sauce available for the number of people who wanted. So the ones who missed out are protesting. Hashtag, give us the sauce. We want the sauce. Here's an eyewitness account tweeted. Someone observed the scenes. I've tweeted, angry crowd chants, we want sauce, as police. That's police, newsman.
Yep.
Police were called. Police forced them back. It sounds like, you know, like the G20 summits when the, you know, anarchist people just protest and the police drive them back.
Do they even know what this stuff tastes like? I mean, the last time McDonald's rolled out this sauce was back in 98. A lot of these protesters don't look... they look like they're in their early to mid-teens. They wouldn't even know what it tastes like. It could taste like tar for all we know.
It's not about the sauce. There must be some weird psychological thing going on here. McDonald's... the story's been framed as a McDonald's PR stunt that has backfired.
Right. Okay.
It's done nothing of the sort. Absolutely nothing. This is not a backfire.
No.
This is a slam dunk. This is like US McDonald's stores, and we're talking about it here in Australia. This thing's gone viral. This is McDonald's absolute dream scenario.
I guess it's pretty obvious now to me, but the whole limited time only is something I haven't really taken seriously, because I've never really treasured anything too dearly at McDonald's. But to say that, I always think, oh yeah, they just hold that up their sleeve for a, you know, they just don't want to increase their menu. It's not that at all. They just want to generate a bit of hype about a certain product.
Mm.
And this has gone to a new level.
I think it's a new marketing trend that we might have just spotted. I don't know if anyone else has picked this yet.
All right.
Where you put on a promotion, a stunt like this, and deliberately sabotage it.
Right.
You attract a whole group of very keen, enthusiastic people to your store for something free or for something special or limited, and then you intentionally make sure there's nowhere near enough supplies, so that the backlash, the outrage ensues, and then it becomes an actual news story.
Placards is a whole lot more interesting than looking at sort of a whole lot of fat fast food eating people just licking their lips with contentment. We want to see anger.
You're
and
so
that's
right.
What they've got.
You're so right. Oh, you know, I want this Szechuan sauce and I got it and now I'm going. That's not a story.
No.
That's not news. No one cares about that.
No.
But have an angry mob and boom. So these people did it. Some cosmetic company did it in Australia not that long ago, a couple months ago, offering free lipstick. Thousands of people. I'm having major problems with this microphone. If my voice is going in and out, it's because I'm basically being like a roadie technician for my own mic.
Check.
Anyway, they were giving away free lipsticks. Thousands of people turned up, and it looks like they only had, you know, maybe three or four lipsticks to actually hand out. Everyone else missed out and was so outraged that it became news.
I bought You know the, what are they called? Fitness bands?
A Fitbit.
But there are other ones. And okay. I saw that Kellogg's was doing a promotion and you had to buy 3 boxes of cereal. And I thought, oh, well, I don't really want to pay for one of these, but if I'm going to buy some cereal and it was half price. I thought I bought 3 packets of half price Nutri-Grain.
Yeah.
And got all fired up for my fitness band.
Would you normally buy the Nutri-Grain?
No. Oh, okay. Maybe if it was half price. I wouldn't buy 3 boxes though.
Yeah.
So did all that, filled out all my forms on the Kellogg's site and found that they'd run out of stock.
So I've been
sucked in.
And did you send an angry tweet?
No, well, it was towards the end of the promotion, so I guess I got what I deserved. But have a limited number, make me think, ooh, I want that, and stirred me up. But no, nothing compared to this.
If you could have organised enough of your fellow colleagues who missed out on the same thing, you could have been the spearhead of a social protest group.
Maybe.
Yeah, I have not really gone in for much of the lining up, you know, stuff that you have to line up for. Mm. These guys were lining up out the store to get this special sauce. The only comparable thing I could really think of, maybe a poor reflection on the city, when the righteous donut chain Krispy Kreme arrived.
Yes, it
was you sort of forget, but at the time, that was an embarrassingly large amount of hype about that. And I didn't line up for that.
No,
I can report.
There was freeness with that, wasn't there? Free donuts to be had for the first.
Maybe.
I think the first few people through got a.
Maybe, but it was even more than just that. There were, you know, even the people who had to buy them were queuing up, and there were reports of like assaults, like people getting rolled for their donuts.
Oh my goodness! I hate hype about food. Actually, I hate hype about anything because I'm such a mellow guy, really, that whenever they go, oh, you have to have a Krispy Kreme donut, and then I'll have it, I go, oh, that's tasty. But I don't give the reaction people want.
No.
So you won't find me queuing up for it, although I love a free thing, a free donut especially.
I'm just going to make up a generic placard that I can take to any of these things, just like interchangeable. Hashtag give me the free thing, and then wherever these things pop up, you'll find me front and center with my hashtag give me the free thing placard. I'm really going to get into it.
So what you're saying though, from this whole marketing point of view, it's not the food that is making people do these desperate, ridiculous things. It's the feeling. It's the feeling of being, you want to be part of the craze or the movement.
Yeah.
What this cartoon has told you is delicious and life-changing. And now McDonald's said, yep, it's not available for one day. It's like the pot of gold.
Oh, this cartoon has a really intense, vocal, you know, radical fan base online. It's it's like a, you know, nerdy kind of show. So the internet is their playground, and they make their presence felt. And McDonald's have just leveraged off it beautifully.
That cartoon, it's been around for a long time. So this is a fresh. It was an actual episode, or was it actually a promo for McDonald's? The bit I saw on it.
I don't watch it. I'm not that cool. Hey, newsman! Everyone loves a sneaky peek behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
You know, pull back the curtain, wherever it is. Who cares what the curtain's hiding? Let's just have a look behind it. We have peeked behind the curtain of the TV show The Bachelor before.
Yes.
Bachelor or Bachelorette, I can't remember.
Mm.
Someone went on there and then dished the dirt on what it's really like.
Sounded like it was very condensed and a lot of booze involved in that one.
That's right. The production strategy on that one is just get everyone wasted.
Booze them up, get them emotional.
And record what happens. this week we have a sneak peek behind the scenes of another reality TV show favourite. I actually like this one. Bachelor I was not so on board with.
Mm-hmm.
Survivor I quite love.
Is Survivor right up there as one of the first of this sort of format, you reckon?
I reckon it could be the first.
Mm. Yep. Anyone that's been living under a rock, I guess it's around 20 people, I think. We couldn't quite work out the number off the top of our head. stuck on a tropical island, and they go through physical activities and form alliances, and basically one is voted off each episode, leaving someone to take out about $1 million.
Yeah, half a million this year.
Half a million this year.
You know, in the modern age, the budget has been, you know, cut down on these things.
But basically, yeah, people going hard in physical activities and then having to have little whispers around the jungle to say, let's vote out this person or this and that. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, a combination of physical ability and social skills. And you're right, I reckon it was the first show and the first episode came from America, and it was that, maybe his name was Richard, famous guy who won the first ever. I think a strategy of his was just to be naked the whole time.
Well, it makes for a lot of blurring for the editors. That's
yeah, they had a lot of pixelating.
I just, before you get into the behind the scenes, I haven't watched some of the recent series, but what really got me in, I was living in the Riverland. We only had about two stations, TV stations, and so there wasn't a lot of choice. Some people at the workplace set up a sweepstakes with people, so we all
gamble
had
responsibly.
One or two people in Survivor to follow.
Yeah.
And gee, I was hooked. I was hooked because, well, there was nothing else to do and it was good water cooler talk. But okay. what's happening in the latest one?
So nothing to do with the merit of the show.
No, it was absolute. No, but it was good because you got involved. You followed one of the two, and you pinned your hopes on certain people rather than just sort of watching all and sundry.
Because you had money on the line.
Oh, $2 or something like that. So big stakes, not
this is,
half a mil.
It's just horse racing to you.
Flesh market.
Even though that's how you feel about it, you might still be interested to know that these are actually real people.
On a real
show.
Sorry, web guy.
And this year, Pete, he was out there for 54 days. He got down to, you know, like the pointy end.
Mm.
Final four, I think he was. He's revealed what it's really like behind the scenes. And I, for one, was very keen to know, because I have always wondered about this in particular. Oh, I see them doing their challenges. They're always like under a blazing sun, half naked.
Mm.
I worry about sunburn. Like, yeah. I always watch it and think, man.
Most of them get a little bit, you know, they look a bit red on the nose. But apart from that, they look okay. So,
well, yeah, they always look like basically models. But, you know, I fear for them. But anyway, Pete says, hey, you're allowed to have sunscreen and insect repellent.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sunscreened up. That's a relief.
Yes.
And insect repellent, he says, even with that, they still get eaten alive by mozzies.
Because there's always a lot of night vision of them sort of rolling around together on some bamboo and slapping mosquitoes and stuff. But let's get mosquitoes,
yeah.
I said.
Yeah.
Go on.
I'd want a flamethrower to take out those mozzies. He also says, I guess there's a thought that they probably all stink a lot.
Yeah.
Because they don't get to, like, they've got water usually. They can jump in the water, I guess. But
they normally, sort of washing in the shallows.
Yeah, but then they go and do challenges and, you know, sweat it up. Mm. And they don't have a washing machine on hand. They don't wash those clothes or anything. Anyway, he says, you don't notice the smell. I have heard that you will... I don't know if it's true, but a smell ceases to register with you after like about 7 minutes or something.
7 minutes?
Yeah.
Your own smell or just
anything?
Smells around you, okay.
You just start tuning it out after that.
Is it a bit like the sound of an air conditioner? Unless someone alerts you to the sound, it sort of just blurs into the background after a while.
Yeah, that's like white noise. This is like white
noise. So they're all stinkers, but because they're together and just... smelling it all the time.
They don't even notice it.
BA be gone.
Yep. The torches are really heavy.
Okay.
But he says, well, then again, maybe it's because they're starving, have no energy, and they just feel really heavy.
On the old rice and nothing else diet.
Yeah.
A bamboo stick can be.
This is not a surprise. The seats at Tribal Council are incredibly uncomfortable.
Right.
This was something we saw on The Bachelor, where producers just want to put the contestants in the most physically and emotionally difficult spot possible. So even down to the seating arrangements, everything is calculated to you know, really test these guys.
I'm not sure if this is part of your fun facts, but I'm assuming this, say, 7 or 8 minute part of the hour episode takes perhaps hours to film. So sitting on uncomfortable seats would be
he didn't actually mention
really
that.
Annoying and frustrating.
You're right, though. Yeah,
it would get tempers frayed.
Yeah. And they are always shift. You know, it's a good metaphor for what's going on there, because you know they're all sitting on there and they're shifting and you know moving and it's so deep. speaking of deep, their relationships between contestants run deeper than just strategy chats. He says when you watch the show, you just see them quickly strategizing about who to vote out, but in real life, you know, they're getting to know each other, getting to know about each other's families and dreams and aspirations.
Ooh.
They make real connections.
Oh.
How about this? He said they even play games together. This didn't make the final cut, but in this season they played snakes and ladders and had a Connect Four tournament on the sand.
That's good. I would back that. Have you ever been? I'm sure you've been on camps, and I just find that in a short or tours, holiday tours, a short period of time, you spend 24/7 with people, more so than probably you would with your family members. You can connect really well with people because you're just intensity.
Yeah, and they're all on their own, so they need to, you know, they need to.
You can't take reach a break out and go see your family. It's
no. Yeah, interesting. Hadn't thought of this, but apparently they're on guard for tsunami warnings at all times. And if they get the warning, they have 6 to 8 minutes to get out of there.
Where's the latest series been held? Where was it?
In the tsunami area? It was somewhere.
Yeah, okay. Tropical island in the firing line. That's fair enough.
Yeah. Related, apparently they caught the end of a cyclone as well during the thing. That was scary, as it would be. And he reckons he finished the show with a fear of rain. Nothing ever dries. You're almost always uncomfortably wet, and when the rain hits, the idea of being drenched and having no real way to dry yourself is on every contestant's mind. So he reckons it's puts a real, I was going to say dampener on the mood around camp.
The thing I like about Survivor, as opposed to some of the other ones, it is a real test of the human, this is overplaying it, but the human strength. Like, you've got 54 days out on an island without your family, without your friends, eating rice, trying to be nice to people, trying to be nasty to people. Yeah. It'd be draining.
Oh,
that's a long commitment.
Yeah.
It's a long commitment.
Yeah, we sit back in our armchair, watch it, you know, the TV show.
And some of the tests are not only, some are a bit, it's a knockout, you know, run up and down the, pull on a rope, push a tire sort of thing.
Do a puzzle.
But some are like, they're standing up on a pole for like 5 hours just trying to outlast another person. That's some mentally tough stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, he says the challenges, it's often glanced over, but the challenges are quite dangerous and there's a lot of injuries.
Okay.
There's a lot of worry amongst contestants about getting a small cut that might lead to an infection.
Yep.
A lot of contestants get put on antibiotics during the show. This guy, Pete, went on a course of antibiotics twice just in the one season.
Yep, that's...
So that puts me off, you know, that is not good for my germaphobe point of view. I probably wouldn't last past lunchtime on the first day. Last one, never considered this, the buffs. Never even knew what a buff was until Survivor started.
Okay.
Like, I would have thought it's like a bandana.
Right. What?
It's like the fabric that they tie around. It shows what tribe they are with.
Okay. Is this the neck?
Yeah.
Neckerchief?
The neckerchief. They're called buffs.
Buffs, sorry.
They're actually super useful. So they have to wear them to show what tribe they're on. But they use them to wrap over your head at night to keep bugs away. And how desperate, a thin piece of, like, it's just like cotton. He reckons they're really warm. So how desperate must he be to snuggle up under a a buff how big is the size of a hanky.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Web guy, how would you go? Number one, physical tests and challenges. And number two, the mental battle of trying to rally opposition and find alliances and...
Oh, geez. I could see I could see myself being mediocre at best on both counts. Like, I don't think I'd be the worst physical challenge person.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be maybe mid-range and maybe dropping into the lower half. Probably enough to keep myself, you know...
clear for the first couple of episodes.
Yeah. And then the social game, I would be like a... you know, I'd probably just find someone and just, you know, slipstream behind them for a little bit, I reckon. I wouldn't be like your big up front.
Playmaker.
You know, yeah, your big...
Kingmaker.
Yeah. I wouldn't probably be one of those guys.
I formed an alliance with you about 6 months ago. I haven't been able to get rid of you since.
Hang on. Have I just been blindsided?
You have. You have. I'd be the same, I think. I'd probably struggle with the... problem solving, puzzles under pressure.
Oh yeah,
I'd hope they would come after a while, because I think I'd just melt under the pressure of trying to form a puzzle of tribal sort of things.
So hard. But if you knew you were going on to the show, you'd brush up on puzzle skill, I reckon. That's what I'd spend the months before I arrived, just honing my puzzle ability.
And in terms of forming relationships with people, I'd probably agree with everyone and get found out that I have sort of gone, oh yeah, I'll vote him off, or yeah, she's gone. And everyone would sort of be pointing fingers going, how did the vote go wrong? Someone has just... So I doubt it last past 2 weeks, basically.
Newsman, the tribe has spoken.